Hello, Internet, and welcome to Old Geek, Young Geek. I am Imperator Scott Pell. With me is Immortan Steve Johnson.
Wow, Immortan Johnson. I love that. Immortan Steve.
Immortan Steve.
That's what I'm going to have my grandchildren call me.
And we're going to be talking about the new Mad Max movie because we've both seen it and we both love it a lot. And there's some oddities about it, like how it came to be. So let's just talk about the movie itself. I love it. I've seen it three times, and it hasn't gotten old. It's a fantastic movie with amazing, I wouldn't call it set design, but like the design of like all the different elements of it, like the cars, the outfits, the special effects. It's all really well done, and there's barely an ounce of CGI in the entire thing.
There's a little bit here and there, but not too much.
Here and there, but it's not enough to like, you know, say like, oh, that was CGI. No, those were all like legit stunts and crazy explosions, and just like, I love how every single establishing shot in that movie could be posted like as a heavy metal album cover.
It's totally true.
No, it totally is true. Like all those cars, especially like the whole theme of Immortan Joe and his army of war boys, like with the dude with the guitar and the flamethrower and the big drums and the amplifiers behind him, like that just screams heavy metal,
right? Totally.
And oh, it's so epic and it's such a great, well done.
What got me is like I was expecting it to be good because of the hype that that it had been getting. Like I was expecting, oh, it's going to be a really exciting action movie. It's going to be. But, man, I was not prepared for it to also be smart. Like, that kind of blew me away. Yeah. I was like, this is a really smart movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Mad Max movies are really smart, and I don't know why I would think this one would be different, but it's just sort of brilliant. And it comes from this place that they don't make movies like that. You know, like, how could... It had, like, almost the sensibility... in a weird way, of like an indie movie or some movie that's not beholden to some big Hollywood system. And you gotta... Right. I can't imagine how it came about. I was thinking about this, like...
Yeah.
Given the system that Hollywood is, and the place of the director, George Miller, that's his name, right? His place within the Hollywood hierarchy...
Greg Miller.
That his place within the Hollywood hierarchy... I mean, he directed Beyond Thunderdome, and that was 30 years ago... And in the meantime, he directed Happy Feet, and he directed Babe, A Pig in the City. And that's his resume, right there. And yet, somehow, probably because he must be the most incredible, he must be an amazing tough guy, that guy, to hold on to the rights to all that stuff. I can only imagine that that's how he has the gig. He's like, we're not making a Mad Max movie unless I'm making a Mad Max movie. You see what I'm saying? Because this guy's 70 years old, you know, and what studio is going to say, oh, we'll give this 70-year-old guy who directed Happy Feet, we'll give him almost $200 million to make a movie down in Australia, and it's going to be a movie that flies in the face of all the conventions that we've established of action movies over the last 30 years.
Most definitely. By the way, I just want to re-correct myself. I was mistaken. It's George Miller.
George Miller. I was right! Ah!
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But, it's definitely smart. It's not just, like, action. It's not just, like, explosions per minute. It's really well-paced, and it is smart, like, in its approach to how it does all the things, like, with all the characters and their motivations and, like, their sort of personas and, like, the different gangs and the different, you know, just everything was just so well done. It was...
Just imagine the meeting where George Miller says to the studio heads that he wants $200 million from, that he says... okay, Mad Max is going to kind of be an ancillary character. It's not going to be his story. It's going to be the story of Furiosa. It's not going to be the story of Mad Max. And also, you know, it's going to be about feminism. You know, they must have been like, what are you talking about? No, it's not.
Yeah, totally.
So, like, I mean, was blown away by that movie. Like, just so, I'm so amazed by it. I only saw it once, but I'm definitely going back. I can't decide if... Yeah. It's too much for my 8-year-old son Dexter to see. He really wants to see it, but I think it might be just a little too intense.
I think that the levels of violence are somewhat tolerable. But
it's a different kind of violence. It's like cartoony. Well, not cartoony, but it's like video game.
Not
violence.
Really.
It's like car crash violence. I thought.
It definitely is like that car crash violence where like there's a lot of car crashes and a lot of deaths. There are some instances where it gets a bit gory.
A little bit.
Detailed, but I don't know. I think I personally would hold off. I don't have any children, and but if I did, I would hold off until maybe like, I don't know, 13 at the very least. But that's me. I'm very conservative when it comes to those sort of things. Like, you know, my mom raised me by like by holding off on certain things until I was of the appropriate age, you know, according to the MPAA or the ESRB. And I agree with that to a certain extent.
Well, but, I was raised exactly the opposite. My mom did not care about... she didn't know, but it wasn't that she didn't care. She really had no... She had... she, to this day, has not been to a movie since she saw Cleopatra in 1964. She said that that was such a bad movie that she never went back to the movies. So she had no idea what movies were like by the time it was the 80s. And I was like, hey, Mom, I want to go see this. I want to go see this movie called The Evil Dead. Can I go? And she'd be like, sure. She'd drive me there and drop me off with my friends and we'd go see The Evil Dead. She had no idea, like none whatsoever. I've talked to her about it since then. Yeah. And she said, what was in those movies? And you were seeing them when you were 11? I was like,
whatever.
So I have the opposite view where I'm just like, my thing is more, this is weird, but like, I just want my kid to be exposed to things that are good more than like really caring about the content. Because I always come back to this. What's going to happen? Like, if I take him to see Mad Max, like, what's going to happen? Is it going to make him, like, is the next day he's going to get up and dress like the Humongous? And, like, go out and, like, throw a razor boomerang at people? Is that what's going to happen?
I don't think that's going to happen. It's more of, like, the psychological aspect. Because, like, it's not really, like, you know, life imitating art. But what is more of the takeaway from Mad Max Fury Road?
Well?
What is the takeaway? And I think that... the quote at the end of the movie, which I feel like should have been at the start of the movie, which I think I'm paraphrasing here because I don't remember it exactly, but it is, where must we go, we who wander this in this wasteland, to seek our better selves?
Right.
And, you know, that makes sense because, like, we, even in our so-called society, are seeking to improve ourselves in one way or another. We're always seeking to get, like, the higher ground. And the people in the movie, that's exactly what they were doing, because they started with nothing, and they were looking for something better. And, you know, they were just on that search, that hunt.
But if you think about how they achieved it, it's actually, like, an uplifting message, or at least I thought it was, that, you know, like, they were only able to lay the seeds for their new civilization through cooperating with the war boys and the trophy the breeder women, that like the greatest thing was that they had the opportunity to kill Nux and they didn't. They were like, nah, we don't do that.
Yeah,
like even though that would have been the easy and the most logical choice, that's like in the fact that Nux sacrificed himself and, you know, like the whole thing. I thought it was a positive message. I mean, it's very bleak at the beginning, definitely. Like, I mean, it's a bleak society, but, you know.
Yeah. It's a very bleak movie. But, yeah, it is uplifting because, like, these characters, they fight. And, you know, eventually they succeed. And like you said, you know, to put a, you know, literal sort of figurative spin on it, like you said, seeds for society. And that was one of the things like they got from one of the other side characters, is like they had literal seeds that they could plant and grow and, you know, basically start society anew and have agriculture and have all these things that, you know, they've lost to the wasteland of the war that had happened and, you know, all that stuff.
It's such great storytelling to have physical seeds be there. Like you're just like, yes, that's how movies are supposed to be. That's how movie symbolism is supposed to work.
It totally followed the rule of show, don't tell. not many things were explained.
Oh, I love that. That was one of the things I loved most.
Yeah, it wasn't explained how the world had gotten to that point. It wasn't explained who these different gangs were. Like, at the start, when they first take the left off the road and are heading into enemy territory, like, they're attacked by those red buggies that are covered in spikes. Did they say who the... what gang that was? No. They hinted, like, oh, they might be Russian or German. Right. I couldn't really understand the lyric, what they were saying, but... you know, like, that was just another gang. It didn't spell everything out for you. And that's what made it a really enjoyable and immersive experience of the movie.
It's true. I love the fact that, again, like, I can't imagine the meeting where the executive said, listen, George, we got to put in some voiceover at the beginning so people know what's going on. And yeah. Him going, no, that's not what we're going to do. Imagine any other movie. I mean, like, imagine, like, a Will Smith vehicle that costs $200 million.
Yeah, wow.
Not having a voiceover that explains exactly what's going on. I mean, you can't even imagine it, because that's just how it's done now, is that everybody in the audience is assumed to be really, really stupid and will not be able to follow what's going on. And while maybe that's true, at the same time, if you're so stupid that you can't follow what's going on in a movie, then you kind of don't need to know what's going on, because you're kind of not curious about it, right? I mean, what do you think?
Totally.
Like, if you just are the kind of person who really can't understand the things they see, then you just let things wash over you anyway. So you don't need a voiceover. You're never going to go,
I guess.
It didn't really make sense when, because you're not that critical.
Yeah.
Boy,
there
was a
small,
elitist, aren't I?
A little bit. But there was a small montage at the open of Mad Max.
You're right.
There was a monologue of Max himself. And then after he got captured, went to black, small montage, like, establishing the world of, like, you know, man attacking man and, you know, just kind of blowing everything up. And then, you know, the movie started. And it was a great movie. And I really, really did enjoy its pacing, its design of all the different cars, which were actual cars. Like, they had I loved Imperial Joe's monster truck
that he had.
That was, like,
so cool.
That was, like, the 57 Bel Air with another 57 Bel Air, like, shoved in the back of it.
So awesome.
It was so cool! And, like, it had bulletproof windows, and, like, there was the Polecat cars, which were actually, like, just dudes on these big sticks that were rocking back and forth that looked absolutely crazy, and they were real. Like, they actually had those on cars. They wanted to do it in CGI just because they thought, like, it'd be too dangerous, but then, like, some of the guys, like, took it out for a test run just to try it out, and it worked, and they put it into the movie.
Another meeting where they were like, hey, George, if we do it in CGI, we could save $30 million. Well, I don't care, because we're not doing it in CGI, right?
Like, well, no, it was actually George Miller's thing. Like, we should probably do this in CGI because it'd be safe, because, like, what they were doing was insane.
Right.
Like, these giant, like, pole vaulting poles, like, just rocking back and forth on a hinge.
But I mean, like,
with,
like,
another guy, like, controlling it. Like, that's kind of like Cirque du Soleil, but on a desert road. Like, in the desert on a beat up car. Like, that is just crazy.
But just, I mean, like, the planning of when you're planning those kinds of shots, like, pre production wise, when they said, like, when he comes up with the storyboard where all these things happen, your mind would immediately go, well, we'll just do it in CGI. I mean, well, that's how to do it. Like, why wouldn't we do it in CGI? And the fact that he said, no, you know what? That's not how we're going to do it. And that he had whatever kind of juice, or whoever at the studio was backing him up. I really wish I knew the story behind this. Like, I wish we could get the inside story of how this all came about, because it would be totally fascinating. When you think about George Miller's career, he directed an exploitation movie in Australia, the first Mad Max. Uh-huh.
Yep.
He directed The Road Warrior, which was successful, but a shot in Australia movie, and not really all that successful. I mean, Mad Max 2 in 1982 was number 31 in the yearly box office grosses. It grossed $23 million. But here are some movies that did better than it. Something called Some Kind of Hero made more money than Road Warrior, and you don't see a Some Kind of Hero reboot happening.
Nope.
Something called Best Friends made more money. The Sword and the Sorcerer, Gandhi, The Verdict, Annie made a ton more money. E.T., of course, made literally 10 times as much money as The Road Warrior. More than 10 times as much money as The Road Warrior. So, I mean, wow. It wasn't like this huge blockbuster. It was a cult movie at best in the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, people who were nerds or who would be now like geeks or comic book dudes were into it, mm-hmm. because it's obviously was the coolest movie that came out that year. I mean, if you like explosions and violence, it was amazing. And it was
definitely
super, super influential on every action movie that followed.
Yeah.
But it didn't make so much money, and it's not like, tell me, I mean, before Fury Road came out, had you seen any of the Mad Max movies?
Yeah, I'd seen Road Warrior.
Okay.
I've seen Road Warrior.
Is it, like, among people who are younger, of the younger generation like you, is it the kind of thing that's, that is well known or no?
I would say that the look of Road Warrior is well established, because when you see that movie, you know, that's like the look of, you know, the post-apocalyptic genre.
Right.
You know, there's people wearing pots and pans on their armor, for armor, and like beat up cars that they built themselves.
And you see that aesthetic in things like Fallout and a million lesser movies that followed The Road Warrior.
Yeah, just like a million other things that tried to do like the post-apocalyptic thing. Mad Max did the post-apocalyptic look first, and it did it right, because everyone followed that sort of, outline, you could call it, and, you know, they added on their own sort of spin to it, but... It most certainly was iconic in its look and its direction. So I definitely respect the movie for what it did. And, you know, I love that it's sort of coming back and it's doing it again, but in a way that's highly stylized. Right. What Fury Road has above any other sort of action movie these days is that it has personality. And that can really go a long way, because like you see George Miller's vision come through in that movie. It's the entire movie, because like even with like something like Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, like that movie has those characters which are pretty iconic, but they seem to be the only focus. With Fury Road, like every element of that movie has personality.
Right.
So that's yeah.
We talked a little bit before we started recording about the other Mad Max movies, because I know my immediate thought was upon seeing it, was, oh, I gotta go back and watch all those other Mad Max movies, because when I came out of Fury Road, the first thing I said was, I have got to see all of the other Mad Max movies back to back, because in the scene with the brides in the truck, one of them pulled out the music box from The Road Warrior, and that I recognized. And I was like, oh my god, like, does that mean that the feral kid from The Road Warrior grew up to be that woman? Is that what they're trying to say? I don't know, but it's so cool that it's there. I don't know if there's a continuity. Like, I don't think there is. Yeah. I'm going to say there isn't one. I don't think there should be.
I don't think that there was, and I don't think that there should be either. I think it was just, like, a nod, a reference to it. But, yeah, totally, like... So, I went and saw the movie three times, as I said, and it was a bunch of different circumstances, but the third time that I went and saw it, I went and saw it with my best friend, and after we got out, he was like, that was really good, and we just kind of geeked out about it like we're doing right now, but yeah, he just wanted like everything to do with Mad Max Fury Road, so like, when I was up in Traverse City for Memorial Day weekend, there was a Comic-Con going on. And so we went there just to, like, hang out, but, like, he wouldn't give anything unless it was, like, Mad Max-esque. And he couldn't find anything, so I was, like, really disappointed. So we went on, like, this conquest to find, like, copies of the original movies. Mad Max, Road Warrior, and Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome.
Right.
And, we went on this huge quest, and so we finally got all three of them. And we sat down and we watched the first Mad Max, and we were sorely disappointed. I guess we were kind of expecting, like, the post-apocalyptic type thing.
Right.
But, like, we really didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, you know,
we kinda
I haven't seen that movie since I was about 15, so I don't even remember anything about it, except that I thought it was boring. That's all I remember about it.
And that's exactly what we thought about it as well. Like, we didn't really know what was going on in the story. The pacing was awful and just slow. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know if it was supposed to be like an action movie or if it was supposed to be a drama or something like that, but, you know, there was this, it was like cops and robbers, but the robbers weren't robbing anything and they weren't causing that much of a ruckus.
Right.
They killed a few people, but, I mean, like, it was a biker gang that was just driving really fast, and hey, there's a speed limit, you know? And like, that was it, you
right.
know? And, you know, Mad Max hunted them down. And a fun fact, the guy who played the toe cutter in
right.
the first Mad Max movie later went on to be Immortan Joe in Mad Max Fury Road. It's the same guy.
Same guy?
So that's pretty cool. Same guy. That's pretty
George
neat.
Miller is loyal to his friends.
Yes. Yes, indeed. But, yeah, that movie was kind of boring. So we're like, all right, well, Road Warrior will be better. Because I've actually seen that one before.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so we threw that in the next day. And we watched that one. Like, yeah, this is where it's headed. You know, because, like, in the first Mad Max movie, everything was green and just normal and Road Warrior, everything had been destroyed by a nuclear war that was unrelated to the events of Mad Max, which
right.
I thought was cool.
Well, didn't he, at the end of Mad Max, didn't he, like, drive off into the wasteland? I remember how it ended. I seem to remember that's all I remember about it, is that he sort of crossed the threshold of civilization into this other place where there were
so
no rules.
At the end of Mad Max, he, you know, got his revenge, and he drove away from the explosion and rode off into the proverbial sunset.
Right.
At the end of Road Warrior, he was driving... Yeah, he was driving the big rig to help the villagers get out of the refinery and lead the bandits away from the, you know, people who live there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically the bait and switch, because they filled the tanker with dirt rather than the gas. Spoiler,
oh my god, 30-year-old spoiler alert.
30-year-old spoiler. But I haven't seen Beyond the Thunderdome, but I know that it has Tina Turner in it, so I'm not
Good.
Too not too hyped about
you
that.
You know, I did see Beyond Thunderdome, I believe, when it came out, but I remember literally nothing about it except for that two men enter and one man leaves.
Yeah, that's what
everyone
remembers.
That's what happens in the Thunderdome, but I don't remember any of the details of the film. So
no.
I can't really... You know what's interesting about all of the Mad Max movies? Is that he always ends up leaving after he completes what he's done. And he doesn't, like... He doesn't stick around for whatever reward there is. Like, he's not a leader,
yeah.
Mad Max. He
doesn't
lead people.
He's not a leader, and nor is he a follower. He is straight up a loner, and he did that in Mad Max Fury Road as well. Like, the character of Max, like, he could have stayed.
Yeah,
he totally could have stayed with all those beautiful women and, you know, raised the society and, you know, helped improve things, but he left before they even had a chance to say goodbye.
Well, what do you think that says? Like, why do you think, what does it say in the film universe that he would do that? See, like, I'm thinking that the reason that he left is because Mad Max knows in some way that Mad Max is the reason that society can't work. You know what I mean? Like, Mad
Perhaps.
Max, like, that aspect of human nature to be a lone wolf and to solve problems by murdering people and to be, like, the tough guy. Like, that's what caused the world to die. Like, which is why they kept asking, like, who killed the world? And really, the answer is, well, people like Mad Max.
Yeah.
So I think he knew, in some way, like, he knows that, like, well, look, this isn't going to work if I stay around because I'm going to fuck it up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or my energy
yeah.
is going to ruin this somehow.
And perhaps that's true, because that's why he was able to survive so well on his own and be able to, you know, hold his own when they were being charged by all those masses of bandits in the truck.
Right.
I mean, like, he did a major portion of the butt-kicking in that finale.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I think you're right in saying so, because, like, his chaotic element, his, you know, just madness.
Yeah, he's called Mad Max.
Yeah, I mean, like...
I like that in this movie they made him mad, because he really wasn't mad in The Road Warrior. He wasn't crazy. He was angry.
He may have been a bit flustered, perturbed, maybe.
Yeah, he was angry. He was a little salty. He was crusty, perhaps.
Salty, yeah.
But I would not say he was crazy mad.
No, and so they actually made him, like, have psychological
issues,
effects and scars from his past... But that really made his character, because, like, he barely says two words in that entire movie.
It's so great. And you know what else I loved is that in spite of all the car crashes and special effects and these elaborate action sequences and all this, really the most affecting moment in the movie was when Mad Max looks back at the pregnant woman and kind of gives her the thumbs up. Like, that was the greatest shot in the film. I was like, oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, good job. And exactly. Then he kept on driving.
Yeah, exactly. Like he just like that moment is like movie classic moment. You know, like that would be.
Oh, it totally was. It totally was. But like to speak of like the character of Mad Max, he was like, "Good job, you didn't die," and then he immediately gets back to work driving away from these crazy bandits.
Exactly, and I love the fact that like it just turned all the conventions of action films totally on their head, like. You're supposed to, when you make an action film where there's a bunch of what are essentially sex slaves, right?
Yeah.
Then in any other action film, you got to show that sex slavery. Like, you got to have a scene where, oh, we see how really bad it is for them.
Yeah.
And it's really gratuitous, but, you know, we have an excuse for being so gratuitous, so that's what we're going to do. And then you would have them, for the rest of the film, be, you know, a plot device. You know, a princess to rescue. But that's not what they were in Fury Road. Like, they were.
That's what I liked about those characters.
It was awesome. Like, they were so cool.
Yeah.
What a great
movie.
They
were really good, and they weren't entirely helpless, but they weren't exactly helpful in the especially like in the finale.
I think that they were incredibly helpful because look.
Because like in their different ways they've helped, because the red haired one really helped out with Nux. I like the short hair one because she like really got down to business and you know she was active.
Well,
you know,
like the primary moment was when they didn't kill Nux, when they could have.
Yeah, for sure.
So I mean, like, I don't know. I think that like that portraying those characters in that way and it was just what a stroke of genius. Like, what a genius way to make a film. Like, it's so awesome. Like, and. What a sort of gauntlet thrown down to other action directors and big budget directors for George Miller to just be like, no, here it is. You know, live up to this, you people, because you're not going to be able to. You know what I mean? Like, you're not doing it. I made The Road Warrior back in the 80s, which everybody used as the template for every action movie that followed.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to make the next generation too, because you guys aren't doing it. So I'm going to do it. I'm gonna be the one who overturns the thing that I set up, which is the guy's amazing. George Miller's like my hero. He's the greatest, and I'm definitely
totally
gonna watch Beyond
is.
Thunderdome because I had all these years always thought for some reason, and I don't know why, that Beyond Thunderdome was directed by a different director.
No,
because I remember
it's all
different than The Road Warrior. Like I remember it as being sort of sentimental and not. Just not as like because The Road Warrior was hardcore. I mean, that was like a no holds barred kind of movie. Where I remember Beyond Thunderdome thinking, being disappointed by the fact that, you know, Mad Max is really just kind of a standard issue action guy now. Like, it's not like he's different. Like, they always do that with sequels, you know, where the sequel comes out and, you know, all of a sudden somebody would have been sort of an anti hero. He's all of a sudden a good guy and acts just like a good guy, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, it's the same guy, just different situation.
Like in Lethal Weapon, Mel Gibson is suicidal, and that's
not Mel Gibson. What's his name?
Isn't it Mel Gibson?
Wow.
Oh, not Lethal Weapon. What am I thinking of? The movie where Mel Gibson is the cop and he's suicidal. Oh, what is that movie? Hold on.
To the internet.
Yes.
While you look that up, I just want to say, like, I liked all the different characters. I really liked the Morton Joe wives. I thought they were really fleshed out. Each one had, like, a distinct personality, and they really came through in, like, the different things that they said, the way that they acted. And then later on, like, this was a very female-centric movie, and I'm down with that. I'm totally down with that. Furiosa, who was played by, why can I never think of her name?
Charlize
Theron. Yeah, she was really great. I liked her character.
She was so badass. Oh my god, the one.
She was so boss, and really like she was like some of the things that she said, like when they're chasing away from, you know, when they're running back through the pack of war boys, like Nux gets out on the hood of the car to spray gasoline or nitrous like into the air intake, which is absolutely insane. It was awesome, but like she said like, don't blow my engine, which is like something that you would say, like exactly. That's just like a boss, like it's just a normal line and just like a boss line too. It's like, don't you dare, like this is my baby, don't you mess it up.
By the way, and Mel then Gibson, like in Lethal Weapon, played a suicidal police officer.
Okay, it was Lethal
and
Weapon.
The reason that worked so well, and the whole point of the movie was that, well, he's crazy, he wants to die, so you don't know what he's going to do. But then in all the sequels, well, he didn't want to die because they solved his problem, or they made him not suicidal. So, like, all of a sudden, it doesn't make any sense. Like, well, he's just crazy, kooky guy. Like, but, you know, like, the whole thing doesn't work.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how he's talked about Beyond Thunderdome. And again, I was, I don't know, 15 when I saw it, so I don't have no idea what my critical capacity was at the time. I could be totally wrong. And now,
perhaps,
having seen Fury Road, I gotta imagine I was. I'm sure there's something much more in that movie that I just didn't know at the time. So I'm definitely gonna watch it to check that out.
Perhaps George Miller was under pressure from some higher-ups, you think?
Could be.
I don't know. Those darn higher-ups screwing everything up.
Well, I just can't. The guy who directed his other movies were Happy Feet and Babe, A Pig in the City. I don't know how he has the Hollywood juice to get a $180 million budget to make such an incredibly risky film. It's amazing that it happened, and we should all be really thankful that movies like this still come out. You sort of forget.
Yeah.
Because movies have been so formulaic over the last 15 years that you forget, oh yeah, movies didn't used to be so formulaic. Like, movies used to take great risks like TV shows do now. And so it's kind of cool to see a movie actually taking that kind of risk and having it pay off. I guess lots of movies take that kind of risk and it doesn't pay off, so nobody ever talks about them.
Right. And this one, I don't know. I don't often get to see movies because, well, they're pretty expensive and just hard to coordinate with friends to go do that. But I don't know. This one seems, it stands out a lot from what else. From what's out there right now. Like, there are other action movies. I think, like, Furious 7 is out there, and there's going to be, like, that San Andreas Fault movie or whatever. But, like,
the trailer was really funny because it looked like Dwayne Johnson's plan was that he was going to punch the earthquake. That's what I thought he was going to do.
Oh, but, like, yeah, but all of that just looks like noise.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Oh my god, yeah.
And the thing about Mad Max is that it's orchestrated. It's so well refined and so well done that it just, it's good. It's really good.
It's so good.
I love it. So, old geek, young geek listeners, we appreciate your listening, and we encourage you, both as old and young geeks, go see Mad Max Fury Road. It is so dang good, and
it
see it in theaters,
man.
It totally does. It's and go see it in theaters. It's definitely a theater going experience.
Don't wait for it to come out on whatever, but don't see it in 3D. I'm gonna say don't see it in 3D because
don't
because George Miller didn't shoot it in 3D.
He didn't
shoot it with 3D in mind. Even though they put out a 3D version of it, he shot it with 2D in mind, which makes such a huge difference, especially when a movie's as fast as that one. If you watch that in 3D, I didn't see it in 3D, but if I can just imagine how annoying it must have been.
It would probably make me sick.
Yeah, I don't think it would work in 3D. But I don't know. I haven't heard one way or the other. Maybe it's awesome in 3D. Who knows?
It could be. I think that, like, there was a few scenes in there where they're like, "Whoa, 3D!" But it's not necessary. Go see it in 2D. It's cheaper. So
geeks of all ages agree.
So, thank you for listening to this episode, episode number 13. Lucky 13.
Lucky number, of course.
Yep. It totally is a baker's dozen now. So please follow us on iTunes, subscribe to our YouTube channel, which we have now, go like us on Facebook. Lastly, I think because we didn't hit this on the last episode, special thanks to Dave Prindle for composing our new intro theme. I hope you all like it.
Which is awesome.
Yep. Yep. I'd clap, but I'm holding my microphone. Yep. But, yeah. So thank you, everyone, and have a good evening.
See ya.
And if you like today's podcast, let us know. Send us a tweet at OldGeekYoungGeek on Twitter, or send us an email at OldGeekYoungGeek@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.